Congress meeting to order. It's Juneau, Alaska, on March 4th, I guess, in Senator Farenkamp's room. The first bill we'll hear is a proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 76 by Senator Pierce, an act dealing with charitable gaming. Senator Pierce to the committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, I'd like to have my staff, and also I believe we have Jerry Luckup, the drafter, come forward and just give you a quick overview of the changes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ken Erickson. I'm staff to Senator Drew Pierce. What I'd like to do is give you an overview of what the differences are between the new committee substitute and Senate Bill 76.
Why don't you just do the overview, not the details, Ken?
Okay. Senate Bill 76 contains two basic concepts. The first half of the bill excludes felons from activities in charitable gaming. The second half of the bill prohibits direct contributions of net proceeds of charitable gaming to political candidates. Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 76 also strives to achieve the same ends. The first half of the CS combines all of its felony exclusions into a single section, AS 05-15-105. These exclusions are currently scattered throughout Title V. The committee substitute deletes these scattered sections and then combines their intent into one. This was done for the sake of clarity. The second part of committee substitute for Senate Bill 76 limits direct political contributions from net proceeds to activities other than bingo and poll tab activities.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add, we now have a ban on unclassified and Class A felons for life for being supervisory management conditions for gaming. Other felons have a 10-year ban, and then they can be active in those positions. And we also have always had a ban on folks who have had convictions for crimes of theft and dishonesty, and also conviction of breaking the gaming laws, have been banned for life. This would allow those people, after 10 years, the commissioner would have the ability, if he or she chose, to allow those people under certain circumstances to have permits. So we've actually loosened that area a bit at the request of the department.
Okay. Were there any questions of the committee? Is Chip here? Chip?
Yes, sir.
If you'll make it real quick.
I sure will, Senator.
Okay, please.
For the record, Senator Kelly, my name is Chip Toma. I'm testifying as an individual today. And I appreciate the fact that we've included white-collar crime as a preclusion from being involved in gambling activities, since white-collar crime are crimes of dishonesty and theft. I'm very pleased that we have recognized that crime and have precluded these types of people from being involved in gambling. I would make the comment under the contributions to political parties that, to my knowledge, there has been no instance of a political party engaging an operator or being involved with an operator who stole the proceeds from that political party, as has happened to many of the other charities that have engaged these. And to me, that is the distinguishment here, that a lot of these games have involved in the theft of those proceeds. And to my knowledge, none of those proceeds have ever been mishandled, misused, or stolen from the political parties. And I understand a little bit of your intent here to see that legislators don't benefit from this, but I quite frankly don't see the reason why. I mean, legislators are involved with every aspect of legislation, and I don't know why getting proceeds from a bingo or a pull tab that comes from a political party has anything to do with it. If these games were suspect and they had actually been involved in theft or activities that we find repulsive, I could certainly see it. But I don't see the logic for the preclusion of political parties giving some of the proceeds of these games be it bingo or poll tabs, to candidates. Like I stated before, that's what we do with our political parties. All the proceeds from the political parties that we have in our coffers go to individual political candidates. I think it'd be not onerous, but I just don't think it's necessary to separate that out. And so I'm missing the logic, I guess, of precluding those types of receipts from going to candidates for political office. So those are my only comments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Question? Okay, I have received a list of different occupations and licenses required in the state of Alaska that are affected by felony convictions. And it's an interesting collection. Once somebody is convicted of a felony in this nation, it's very, very difficult to get a real job. Further questions on the committee substitute? Senator Rieger. Senator Pierce.
Okay, I'd like to move and adopt the CS Present Bill 76, dated 3393. It's the K version as a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute.
Any objection? No objections. The committee substitute is adopted. Senator Pierce.
I move CS Present Bill 76, Labor and Commerce for Committee with individual recommendations and the appropriate fiscal notes.
Any objections? No objections. Committee substitute, Senate Bill 76 is committed. That brings us to Senate Bill 122, an act related to the disclosure of information by an employer about the job performance of an employee or former employer. Senator Sharp.
The opportunity to present this legislation to your committee. SB 122, as I recall, was a very similar bill passed by the Senate last session and did not proceed through the House. It's an act relating to the disclosure of information by an employer about the job performance of an employee or a former employee. SB 122 protects employers from liability for disclosure of job performance information regarding a former employee to a prospective employer. The number of defamation suits filed in response to unfavorable references by former employers has increased substantially in the last few years. Out of fear of such lawsuits and just plain intimidation, and on the recommendation of legal professional counsel, many employers are refusing to give honest or meaningful job performance information to prospective employers. And this is a loss for all concerned. The free flow of information in the workplace is a very important part of a free enterprise situation for getting efficient employees. Every employer and employees and in the end consumers benefit when hiring, firing, and promotion decisions are based on complete and accurate information. SB 122 will free up the exchange of information, and that's its intention, and free up the exchange of this information in the workplace by assuring reasonable protection to employers in their job performance disclosures. It's intended to protect only employers who give honest, well-intentioned references. It does not protect employers from liability in cases where the information disclosed was knowingly or deliberately false, or was given with a malicious purpose or intent, or violated the civil rights of a former employee. In the interest of allowing freer exchange of information in the workplace, I would urge favorable consideration of this legislation.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, I'm sorry, Senator Lincoln.
Yes, I do have some questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I just received this just later this morning, so I didn't have a chance to go through all of the information, so maybe it's in here, but when this bill is for all employers of the state, and I wonder if that could be defined somewhere, because I'm not sure what all employers are. Is that somebody who has an office of one other person? for example, in the estate small communities where it's the village clerk who is maybe is one or two people there. So I'd like to know what an employer is and what an employee is. Is it?
Senator Lincoln, through the chair. An employer is any person that engages a service to take another person for their business and pays them remuneration or wages. And it would have to be an employer-employee relationship. And it could be one employer and one employee in the organization, or multiple supervisors and employees. But the information as on employee references would have to be documented in a personnel file.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, I don't have a problem with the intent of the bill, but there have been times where an employee gets written up and it goes in their personnel file. And there have been times when the employee thinks that that has been purged, don't know their rights, they don't know what's in their employee file, so there's things that are in the employee file that shouldn't be there, that should have been purged, or they didn't even know it was in their file. So under this bill, if an employer, somebody calls and says, I'd like to know about Georgiana Lincoln, they go and they pull the file, not because they now this supervisor has changed, and they pull a file and read out of this file. Now, they very well might have acted in good faith, but has transmitted information that is either false, unbeknownst to them, or information that should have been purged from the file. And this has happened repeatedly in situations where it's a small operation. And I wonder how we could protect those individuals.
Through the chair, Senator Lincoln, I don't know how we protect those individuals. We might ask if there's any other people here that wants to speak on this bill that are involved in business. As far as business, normal business practices and what situations that are governed by fair labor practices and hearings by the Department of Labor, normally a personnel file is available, is documented, and copies have been supplied to the employee and initialed out by the employee on anything that's of a negative nature. Now, that's a normal course of business. Now, naturally, some of smaller organizations may not practice or have policies in that manner, but normally that's the general course of business. And, this is not intended to regulate how anyone keeps their files or so forth. It's just to protect employers that do, in good faith, give recommendations based on facts on the relationship of an employee-employer performance in the past. Mm-hmm.
Mr. John. And Senator Sharp, like I said, while I can appreciate the reasoning for putting this together, I just want to also make have assurance that, especially in the villages, that those individuals are protected too, because the changeover is, or the turnover is quite rapid, and I would hate for somebody not to get a job because someone pulled a personnel file and transmitted unknowingly information which is either false or, like I said, should have been purged. So if there's a way that we can correct that, I, you know, would like to do that, and maybe somebody in the audience can answer that.
Any questions? Okay, Mr. Parsons. Where does your transportation meeting today, Ben? Sure.
Chairman Kelly, committee members, Sponsor Sharp. My name is Jamie Parsons. I'm the president of Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, and State Chamber, I believe, had an opposition paper that should be in your packets. Alaska State Chamber of Commerce supports Senate Bill 122 because of the protection it provides employers who, during the course of their normal personnel functions, receive inquiries regarding job performance of employees or former employees. Under Senate Bill 122, an employer who provides job performance information to a prospective employer will be presumed to be acting in good faith unless evidence shows a significant lack of good faith. The employer cannot be held liable for the disclosure or the consequences of the disclosure of information regarding an employee or former employee. In Alaska, there is a relatively small applicant base, and it is imperative that employers are able to act in good faith, sharing information with one another. Although statistics vary on the number of defamation cases, that have been tried and won or settled out of court, the fact remains that sharing objective information currently comes with a risk many employers cannot afford. Therefore, the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce strongly supports Senate Bill 122 and urges the Alaska State Senate to pass this legislation in an expeditious manner. I might add that this is the number one legislative priority for the State Chamber of Commerce. I could briefly describe how we arrive at that process. We have a legislative committee that communicates with all the local chambers of commerce, there's about 35 in the state, and with the board members asking for suggestions, ideas. We meet in a meeting in December, two-day meeting to pare that down, and we did come up with six priorities. They all deal with how it can assist small business, and this came out as the number one priority. So with that, I'll entertain any questions you might have.
Questions? Thank you, David. Bob, sorry, turn over here.
To your knowledge, is there information in a personnel file which is supposed to be held confidential? And not, you know, characterization of job performance, but, is there personal data in there, or are there data that must be held confidential under a job statute?
Well, I believe there is. I don't know the specific senator. Senator Lincoln mentioned about information that perhaps was in a personal file that should not be and could be released. I think when it comes to large operation, they do have their standards and rules to follow. When it comes to small business, I think it basically boils down to talking with the owner or the manager rather than going to a file. Because I have a small business. We have about 50 people. We don't keep files like that. But, Senator, I'm not sure I'm totally answering your question, but I think, like the state of Alaska, they have their... And this would involve both state, or government, I should say, private sector and nonprofits.
It doesn't seem to me that this allows you to release any confidential information. It says this person didn't come to work 10 days ago and said goodbye.
Don't get me wrong, I like the bill. I think that the reference to the disclosure that appears in line 10, probably in the Judiciary Committee, is just make sure that the type of disclosure that's referred to there is limited to the disclosure of characterizations of job performance and related matters. And I think, that's implicit in the bill, but I think we can't resolve it here, but I think it's a good question for the Judiciary just to make it clear the wording, right?
Just an example from personal experience with the company I'm involved with, we've had on two occasions in the last 10 years a problem with a couple of bookkeepers that we chose not to prosecute, and frankly we're hesitant to speak to the next person about because we chose not to prosecute. It wasn't worth it to prosecute. We didn't feel there'd be any real satisfaction in it. We felt that the negative publicity would probably be not worth the money that you were going to recover, if you were going to recover any money. And we're real skittish anymore about hiring a bookkeeper, an accountant, or somebody like that, unless we do a pretty thorough check on their background. Because if people are as hesitant that we are to say something negative about somebody once they left, pretty tough out there to get a real line, I think, on somebody's past employment history without this type of legislation. Senator Lincoln.
And maybe it is the Judiciary that would take up these questions, but would there be any negative feedback if within this bill in the definitions that for information, or maybe even added to this an amendment, that any written documentation that's given to an employer should also be given to the former employee, so they know what information is given out about them that's in writing. Now, what you say on the telephone, you obviously can't document that, and that's the difficult thing too, but the written documentation is what I'm concerned about, because that's where we've had in small companies the information that was purged and or should have been purged was given out. So I'd like to see that perhaps any written documentation that's given in regard to the employee and given to a potential employer also be revealed to the employee what that is. Mr. Chairman, also, when we talk about on line 5, an employer who discloses information, I'd like to see to the sponsor of the bill that perhaps that's another area that we need to define what information is. Is that a telephone, written, I don't know what it is. And that would be pretty hard to show what presumed to be acting in good faith and the preponderance of evidence. If it's by phone, there's not much that one can document what that is, but I'd like to see what that information is. And the other, on line 8, I couldn't read this well. It says, an employer who discloses information about the job performance of an employee or former employee to a prospective employer of the employee or former employee at the request of the prospective employer, now this portion, or the employee or former employee. What does that mean? And I guess I should have asked the sponsor of the bill that section, or the employee or former employee. And while the sponsor is thinking about that, would the chamber have any objection if there were language added that would reveal for the written documentation to be shared with the former employee?
I don't think so. Excuse me, Senator, I don't think so. I can't speak for the entire chamber, but I guess we'd be concerned if that didn't... we met a lot of paperwork, we might just, once again, not be communicating with a prospective employer or employee. I think that, in my case, most of it's verbal.
I wondered if you were to put something in writing, though, what would the harm be of just... Well, I was going to say, mailing that copy to the employee's last known address, because this could be 3, 4, 5 years ago. Actually, if you want to do so, well, I know the solution, but I don't know if I want to propose it. It doesn't seem unreasonable to me that if you're prepared to say something publicly about somebody and write it down, that person shouldn't be allowed to see that somehow. That is not unreasonable.
I don't believe it is either, Senator.
Maybe the solution is to have that have it available to that person if they choose to look at it where you send it to. But that information then, once it's received by a prospective employer, is available to the former employee. I mean, that's not unreasonable to me. Bert, I don't know, what does the sponsor think of that?
Senator, in practice, the 30 years I was involved in employee-employer relationship, most reference requests that I received, like 90% or more, was by telephone, and probably on an employee that had not been there for 2 or 3 years. And it would, I guess, it could send a copy of if any hard copy was mailed to the requesting employer, it could be sent to the last known address of the employee, which in Alaska usually doesn't mean much after 2 or 3 years.
instead of looking?
Because that number is so small, the 10%, or, and I'm sure it would be a small percentage, that all one would have to do is the last known address would obviously have to be when somebody is asking for information. You say, I'll send you the written documentation that we have. Would you please also give me the address that you've got on your file? So they've got the most current address, because obviously if they're talking to you, somebody has given a current address.
Well, it would be a lot easier, I think, if you wanted to go that route, it would be a lot easier just to say that it's available upon request by the ex-employee, by the former employee, if they want to look at it, where you're sending it to.
Mr. Chairman, most of the time you get calls from someone checking someone out, it's because the employee making application put the reference of the company on the application. An employee sort of directs the reference inquiry to their ex-employers. Otherwise, a new employer would have no way of knowing where they worked before, and this was on the application that I could. I would know in a larger town or city.
But they always say, give us your employment references for the last 5 years. I mean, that's normal. That's three.
Okay, Risa, did you want to testify?
Could I have the response from the sponsor on that one section explaining to me that or employee or former employee? I don't know how that reads there.
I would just respond. You might be getting a reference on either a current employee who's working for the employer or one that has departed. That's the way I read it.
But doesn't that say that in the former, an employer who discloses of an employee or former employee to a prospective employer of the employee or former employee? Doesn't that say that there? And I'm going down another line. At the request of the, see, it's at the request of the prospective employer or the employee or former. So the request could come from the employee or employee, former employee or employer. Okay.
Got it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Risa Gerald, and I represent NFIB of Alaska, and happy to be here today in support of the bill, on behalf of our 5,000 members. This was a question I put on our ballot this year, and 86% of our members responded that they would support this type of legislation. From a practical standpoint, I received some comments from some of our members of what is happening out there in the real world. A lady from Ketchikan that has a restaurant bar combination said she spends a lot of time hiring and firing people because of drugs, alcohol, and thievery. And she said she would just love to have a mechanism to get some straight scoop on the people that she was hiring so that she wouldn't have possibly as much turnover in her. And also, she says just a lot of grief and aggravation hiring people so frequently. So with that in mind, I'll answer any questions. On the question of the written information, in 1992, Colorado passed a similar piece of legislation, and I downloaded it off of our research library, and I gave the language to Senator Short, but it shows how they did the written information thing, in case he wants to volunteer that information to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. L? Anybody else that want to testify on this bill? Well, this is exquisite timing. Senator?
That's me, exquisite.
What is the will of the committee, or Senator Sharp? Are there any proposed amendments?
Mr. Chair?
Senator?
Might I ask, Senator Sharp, do you recall what those Colorado regulations were?
They were just given to me just a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I'll make that available to the file, whether it's retained here or it moves on, and for consideration. Basically, it just says any employer that provides written information to a prospective employer about a current or former employee shall send a copy of that information to the last known address.
Good.
Hey. I bet you can get elected in Colorado.
That's legal in Alaska. Maybe judiciary will consider that.
I think it's a good spot to share. Would you bring that to their attention, please?
I sure will.
Is there a motion on the bill, Senator Pierce?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 122 from committee with individual recommendations.
Did you have a question, Senator?
Is there a fiscal note and the fiscal note?
There's a fight, Senator Sharp, as to who's going to move your bill, but a motion is on the floor. Is there objections to moving the bill? On objection, the bill is moved from committee, and Senator Sharp has agreed to forward that regulation information on the judiciary.
Gary, standing by.
Oh, we do? Which one do we do?
Should be real quick here. Just a moment.
Do I...
There's not hearing, so...
They're signing the legislation now.
Without a hearing, and no one to talk, teleconference.
Well, it's just hearing? We're not moving anything?
No, just teleconference, so no one can talk, and...
Okay.
Somebody else up here.
If you do the written language, I would think it'd be sufficient that upon request, the information be made available to the person upon request.
Yeah, plus, if that, and also that the employee can go to the regular former employer's place of business and request a copy of whatever was sent.
If it was done.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it should be just running. Which bill are they on? Which bill are they on? I don't know if I've got on it.
Commercial code, that we heard on Tuesday, and we put it off and said, unless there are objections, we'd probably move it today. Mr. Kurtz, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we had an issue come up at our meeting with the Anchorage caucus. And I thought it might fit in this if we decided to do it. Do you have a copy of the Municipality of Anchorage 1993 legislative program dealing with amending the Uniform Commercial Code?
Yes, I do.
And I noticed that, do you agree that this would fit into the bill?
Yes, I don't have any problem with it being added to the bill. I do think it should be made just one hair more specific, because this is an area that, as the municipality points out, has caused a lot of problems. And the language that's added suggests that 2945-300 includes more than one tax lien. In fact, it only refers to one lien, and that's the way the amendment should read, in my opinion. And that amendment is in 300B, and I think that should be specified too. But beyond that, I have no problem with the bill or the amendment.
And how do you think the amendment should be amended?
In the last line of it, where it says municipal tax liens, the S should be removed, because there is only one municipal tax lien described in 2945-300.
And what is that tax lien?
That is the tax lien for municipalities against all personal property that's assessed. It's a very short section. 2945-300B is a three-line section which states that property taxes, whether they're against personal or real property, is the inference, are first and prior lien, which certainly is the law, regardless of what else the other statutes say. And this cross-reference being proposed by the municipality probably would be helpful to them in dealing with other secured creditors in bankruptcy situations.
Okay. Is there any...
And at the very last thing in the proposed amendment is a reference to 2945-300, and it should be 300B.
So you're saying the amendment should be amended to say it should be 2945-300B?
Right.
Okay. Is there any objection on the committee to making that amendment to the proposed CS?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not objecting, but we would also change the word, you would also be changing the word liens to lien.
Right.
Just lien. And adding the B. Okay.
Okay, did anybody else want to testify on Senate Bill number 112, Labor and Commerce? I'll note it does go to the Judiciary Committee, I believe, doesn't it?
Yeah, Judiciary and then Finance, both.
Okay. There might be a question about the Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure Bill 882 and attorney's fees, but I think that's a question that should be addressed by the Finance Committee after it gets to the Judiciary.
Can I ask a question here, too? And I I meant to ask last time that it says because the bill deals with transactions between private parties, the bill, to the extent that the bill impacts state-funded loan and investment programs. How does this impact the state-funded loan and investment programs of you?
Mr. Kurtz, did you hear that?
Yes. The main place it would impact your state-funded loans and investments is in Article 9 on security interests. There are very few amendments to Article 9, but the ones that are there certainly will help any creditor. I'm looking at page 85 of the bill, which is where the 84, 85 is where the Article 9 amendments start. And to give you a specific example, Article 9 covers where the creditor takes an interest in personal property, like if a state loan program is lending money to a business and takes a lien on an airplane or a piece of construction equipment or something like that. They're in the same position as a bank lending into that kind of collateral. And what these amendments do is just improve the clarity of these provisions, both from the standpoint of the debtors and the creditors. And so it would have a favorable impact as far as the state is concerned in its loan programs.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay. Is there a motion to move to adopt Committee Subject to Senate Bill 112, Labor Commerce Act Amendment?
Move that we adopt Senate Bill 112, Labor and Commerce, as amended.
Without objection, the committee substitute is adopted. It is moved out of committee.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 112, Labor and Commerce, from committee with individual recommendations. And I assume we probably haven't changed the fiscal note to amendment, but with proper fiscal note.
I'm sorry. I did not hear that last proviso.
Sorry. With proper fiscal note. I think it'll still be a new...
Yeah, I don't believe that'll change that at all. Okay, with objection? Without objection, committee substitute, Senate Bill 112 is moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
We're adjourned.
We're adjourned.